So this session is going to be about building apps in Universal Windows Platform. So we talked a lot about Universal Windows Platform and how we are actually running on many different devices. I want to take just a session to talk about all the new things that we brought to the platform, how we're enabling you to run this on many different devices, running all the way from the tiniest Raspberry Pi 2 that you just saw to the Surface Hub 2, for example, the HoloLens, et cetera. And all these different devices have different requirements, different resources. They manage apps a bit differently, so you need to know how to actually write this application, and I want to show you what we've been doing to the platform to enable that. So I'm going to talk about five different topics. First one is talk about XAML, what we've been done in XAML, some of the improvements, some of the new controls we've added. I'm going to talk about performance. You need to be able to write performant applications, so I'm going to show you some of the tools that we've added to Visual Studio. And that's as well as some of the new things in Visual Studio that allow you to write applications more efficiently. I'm going to talk about the app model, some of the new APIs we've added to the platform and how we've combined the different platforms to one unique app model. And finally, I'm going to talk about .NET Native, or how you can run your managed application natively on the platform. So I'm going to dive in deeply into XAML real quick. So we talked about new controls. Andy was standing here just an hour ago talking about all the new controls that we added to the platform, how we've improved the platform. Here's the exact same pivot that Andy was talking about. I just want to spend a minute and talk about how the pivot actually has been brought across all the platforms. It's just an example of how we've thought about how do we bring these controls that work with different input modalities. Some work with touch. Some are meant to work with keyboard and mouse. The pivot has never worked with keyboard and mouse before. So how do we thought about how do we bring this across all the platforms? So it also supports controller and the Xbox, et cetera. So this is the pivot running on desktop machine. You can see it actually looks like a tab control. You can use the mouse. You can click on each one of the tabs. You can use your finger. You can click on each one of the tabs. As soon as the window becomes smaller, so not all the tabs can fit on this window, you can actually see that it goes to the unique pivot experience, where you actually have the selected pivot on the side, and you can actually swipe with your finger. As soon as you use your mouse, you can actually see we've added little arrows that allow you to go through the different pivots with the mouse. So we've done a lot of these things that we say for free for you. You don't have to worry about thinking about how is this going to work with keyboard or mouse, how is this going to work with touch, how is this going to work on this big screen, how is this going to work on this small screen. We've done all that work. We've tried to make it as frictionless as possible for you. Another example is the datetime control. We've had datetime control on both Windows Phone and on Windows 8. But there were different controls, different types of APIs. And we've thought really hard of how do we bring these two controls and how do we combine them. And what we've done is we've actually created a control that has best of both. And you can still use the exact same code you've used before on both platforms and still run on Windows 10. So we created a new control that runs beautifully on desktop, it runs beautifully on phone, and has the same API as the previous controls, but is just meant to run on everything. Additionally, we've thought really hard on how do we support responsive design. Now, these applications, on desktop especially, they can be different sizes. They're windowed now. They're not full screen anymore. So it can be as tiny as on the phone, or it can be as big as on a 30-inch screen. So you need to be smart about how you actually handle this responsive design. So we've added a lot of work into the platform to make it easier for you. Now, how many of you have used Visual State Manager in XAML? I see a couple people. Other people don't like Visual State Manager. Is that why you don't use it? Yeah? I guess I'm nodding hands. So Visual State Manager, it's a nice tool. It allows you to manage your different states and switch between different styles depending on what state you are. So, and for example, here you use object animation using keyframes. It's not a complicated API, but it's also not a simple API to use. I usually use it through Blend. To switch between state, you have to use the code behind. In Windows 10, we've added the ability to do triggers, state triggers, that allow you to automatically switch between state depending on an event that has happened. For example, the adaptive trigger I showed this morning allows you to switch depending on the width of the window. So if it goes less than 720 pixels, you apply different setters. If it goes over 720 pixel, you apply different setters. And we've also improved the way you set values. Now you no longer have to create these keyframes just so you can do this discrete values. You can use a simple setter, use the name of the value, the name of the property, and just set the value you want it to be. And it's very easy to use. Now, that was a simple example of just the width. Now, we've also enabled the platform to allow you to create your own triggers. Let's say you want to have a trigger depending on a different day of the week. If it's Tuesday, you want to apply a different trigger. You don't want to write any code. You just want to do it all in XAML. Let's say you want to have a trigger in this example for a different input modality. So if the user touches the mouse, different setters get applied if the user starts using their finger. So you can create these different triggers. So I have a quick demo that I want to show you of how this works. Now, I like to think there's two kinds of people on the world. There's the cat lovers and the dog lovers. So how many of you are cat lovers? Raise your hand. OK. Dog lovers? OK, about the half. Some didn't raise their hand, and I don't think that's possible. You have to be one or the other. You can't be both. So I have a little demo. I'm a dog lover, so I apologize to all you cat lovers out there. Let me switch real quick to this demo. So I'm going to run this, actually show you what it does. I call this Peekaboo. It's a very simple demo, actually. It's just a dog, very cute dog, but a very sad dog. And the way this works is, as soon as I show my face, it becomes a very happy dog. You know, I can do things like, Peekaboo! I just go, Peekaboo! You know, it's a fun game. I decided to write this. So I want to show you how I'm using actually extensible triggers to write this application. So here's the XAML of the app. You can see that I have an image, just a very simple image, and I've set the source to a sad.jpg. That's the sad dog that you saw. In my visual state manager, I have a state called happy. You can see that the trigger, I have this local pick trigger. This is a trigger that I've created, and I'll show you in a minute what it looks like. And I've set mode to face detected. So whenever a face is detected, a setter is applied to change the value of the image to happy.jpg. Very simple. I don't have any code behind of this code. It's all XAML. Now, the peek trigger that I've written is very easy to use. So what do you do to create your own extensible trigger? You extend the state trigger base. You just create your own class, extend state trigger base. Here's that mode that you saw. I had phase detected. Here's I just create a property, just like you used to creating properties. I do some initializations to initialize the phase detection. Now, the way I do phase detection is we have a new API on the platform for phase recognition. So it just recognizes how many faces are on the platform, and you can do it at any rate you need. I think the maximum is 30 frames per second, so that's what I do. So every time I get a frame, I can check to see if there's a phase detected or not. If there's a phase detected and the mode is set to phase detected, I simply set this trigger to active. Now, I can plug and play this anywhere, and I can detect whenever there are faces. I don't have to write any code behind. I can just use this. Every time there's a face, I can do something on the platform. And it's very easy to use. You guys like it? Yeah? OK. If you didn't like it, I can just cancel. Like, I call the engineering guys and say, cut it. They don't need it. That's just a simple example. We've actually had a huge response from the community about extensible triggers. Morten Nielsen is one of the MVPs who's created a whole GitHub repository with many of these different extensible triggers that he's created. There's one for detecting what platform you're on, if you're on desktop, if you're on phone. There's a couple for input. And you can extend these. You can take this and use them as any way you want. And you can contribute. So there's many of these you can use. Now, finally, what we've done to the platform is we've enabled it for you to extend it any way you need to extend it. Now, it's not the work we've done is the work that you can do yourself in your own control. If you want to create your control, we have, sorry, a little trigger happy here. The work that we've done, the APIs that we're using to detect different input modalities, to check to see if you're in tablet mode or not, all that's available to you. So you can get access to that. You can write your own controls that are responsive to what the user is expecting. We've also added capabilities for you to detect what device you're running on. So you can use, for example, different XAML on a different device family, but still use the same code behind. And we use that custom XAML views. In this case, for example, you can see in the screenshot, we have a couple folders, one for Xbox and one for Team. And we have the same page in a different folder. Now, the system is smart enough, the platform is smart enough to detect what platform device you're running on, and will choose the right XAML file depending on that device. It will not, and will still use the same XAML.cs, the same code behind, so you can still write your custom code depending on the platform. Now, we've added many different additions to XAML platform. Many of them are very popular. And if you're interested, you should definitely check out many of the build sessions that we did in San Francisco a month ago. But I just want to go through a couple of them that I think are very important. The first one is we've added the ability to do change notification dependency properties. Now, before, if you wanted to just get a simple notification that a value has changed on dependency property, you had to extend iNotify to get actual this event. And it was kind of complicated. So now you just have a simple event callback that you can get from a dependency property. We've added the ability to do perspective transform 3D. This allows you to do very cool effects for 3D. You have full control of how the camera looks. And you can do some nice things that weren't possible before. You can actually see this in action in the new Start menu in Windows 10. You can see some of the live tiles, the way they rotate it, actually use this perspective transform 3D and have really cool 3D effects. And now, because applications are windowed, they run in a window, they're not long at full screen, they have a Chrome. You know, they have the close, the minimize buttons on the side, and they have a gray bar on top. We've added the ability and capabilities and APIs for you to actually modify this, for you to change the color, to change the branding. You can actually remove this completely and put your own XAML into this and use it any way you want. And I think it's a very powerful API, unless that wasn't really available there. And finally, as I showed in the keynote, we have the ability to do drag and drop from different applications, from the desktop. And the way you do this is just using very simple events. You can get events for when the user started dragging something from one application, when the user has dropped something, when something's dragging over. So it's very rich, and you can use it in your application. And there are many more improvements that you should definitely check out. One of my favorite is the last one on this list is casting. Casting is now very easy to use in Windows 10. You can simply just set a property that enables any user to cast video content, for example, from your application. They can get a device picker listed for you. You don't have to draw that. And you can just cast whatever is playing in the MIDI element to any, for example, DLNA device that's in the proximity of that device. Now, you can write these applications, and they can look beautiful with all the new XAML improvements we've done. But if they're not performant, your users will not use your applications. They will simply give up and uninstall your applications. So we've done a lot of work to make sure we improve the performance of applications in Windows 10. So the first thing we're doing, I think it's probably the most important thing we're doing, is we're actually using the same XAML controls and same XAML APIs within our platform. We're validating the way the controls work, and this is the first time we've done this. We're catching bugs early. We're getting feedback from internal teams that are building these applications. The start menu is built with the same XAML control that you're using. The Office, the modern Office that's being built, is built the same way. All the first-party applications are built with the exact same XAML platform that you have access to and that you're using. We're using the exact same APIs. So we're catching this and making sure the platform is performant, because the platform is actually Windows. That's what we're running on. Now, if you take your existing 8.0 or 8.1 application and recompile for Windows 10, without actually doing any changes, you get a huge performance benefit. For example, simply just recompiling one application, you can get up to 30% in CPU usage reduction. Or your memory can actually be cut by almost by half just by using this. And you can get a huge performance hit. And you can see we've had some tests with some applications that we've done to see how much they improved within the startup, of how much faster this started, and how much memory they were using. Now, besides that, we've also added some new capabilities to the platform to make your applications more performant, so you have full control of how your applications are loading and how your applications are being used. One of those things is we've improved the binding system. How many of you use binding in XAML? I guess probably most of you, yeah. How many of you love binding in XAML, how performant it is and how beautiful it is? How many of you hate binding in XAML and how performant it is? Wow, I was surprised. I expected a lot more. I guess in Italy, they love binding. Well, some of the feedback we received from developers is that binding is amazing, but it's not performant. It uses reflection, and it just takes, if you have a lot of bindings, it just hits performance on your application crazy. So we've thought really hard on how to improve this. And what we've created is called compile binding, which allows you to specify the data type of the element or the property that you're binding to at compile time. And you don't have to use reflection anymore. This gives you a couple of things. First, when you compile your application, if you have a property misspelled, compiler will actually tell you this now. will tell you something is misspelled, so you don't have to find that out in runtime. Second, because it already knows what the property is binding to, it does not have to use reflection. So the performance of this is almost as if you were not using binding. It's crazy fast. You should definitely give it a shot. You can just replace binding with xbind in most cases, and it will just work. Second, we're giving you control on how you actually load elements in your list templates. For example, if you have very rich templates and you want to have priority of how elements load in these templates, you can do that now by using the X phase. If you specify an X phase priority to an element, this element would get loaded with that priority. So you can actually give visual feedback to your users as the application is loading, and then have to wait for items to load, and they can load periodically as you specify. And finally, we also give you a control to defer an entire instantiation of a tree element tree to later on when the application is being used. So the whole element tree doesn't have to load at the beginning of your application startup. So that way, if something is off the screen, it can be loaded later on, and the user can immediately start using the application without having to wait for an entire tree to get loaded. And you can do this just by using the defer load strategy and setting this to lazy. So make sure you remember that. It's going to come back in about an hour. I'm going to ask you that, a little quiz. And finally, to improve the performance of your application, we've done a lot of work in the tools. We've improved Visual Studio to give you many different tools to analyze and profile your applications. I'm going to talk about that in this section. So we've added many different things in Visual Studio for performance. And for just by enables you to write applications much better in XAML. One of the things is the capability that we've improved the XAML language services by decoupling them from the designer and actually building them on top of Roslyn. This gives you a couple things. First, you no longer have to wait for the designer to load. You can simply just start writing your XAML. Second, because it's built on Roslyn, you have many of the same features that you have with C#, for example, in the editor. If I switch over real quick into this PC, one of my favorite feature, actually, before I get to that, did everyone know that you can now use touch in Visual Studio 2015? I think that's my favorite thing. I mean, we just have to give it, you know, just a little clap for that. I mean, it's amazing. I can't tell you how many times I've done this, you know, select things. It's just crazy. Anyway, my favorite feature that we've added here is this. So let's say you're adding a button, and you have a click handler. Now we can do this, right? Now one of the things we've added now is the ability to actually edit this click handler right here in XAML. You no longer have to switch between your code. You no longer have to find the callback. You can just do it right here. You have full control just like you have in C#. And it's amazing. And there's many of these little things that we've added to the platform. Just make writing applications in Visual Studio a delight. Second is we've added the ability for you to preview your application, how it will look like on many different devices. Now we've said this, that your application will run on many different platforms, all the way from the small IoT devices to the Surface Hubs, which are 80 inches, to the HoloLens. And we've added the ability for you to preview this without having to run this. Not many of you have Surface Hub yet, but you still want to make sure your application runs on the Surface Hub, so you want to be able to preview that. So let me show you how this looks like in Visual Studio. Now, to add, all these different features I'm showing you are actually available right now with Visual Studio 2015 preview. And you can actually, they're available with the free version as well, so you don't need to pay to get these features. Now, here is the FabricCam applications, the interior design applications I showed this morning. And you can see here in the corner, I'm actually viewing this for a 13.3 desktop monitor at 100% DPI. What I can do, I can actually modify this. I can see what this application will look like on a 6-inch phone. And you can see it modifies. I can edit my XAML here in the context of this view. I can also test it on a Surface Hub, an 84-inch Surface Hub. You can see the UI has just increased, and the resolution has just increased. Here you also have an Xbox, and you can see the scaling factor gets applied. You can see what this application will look like on the Xbox. And it's just much faster when you're developing your applications to be able to see what they look like. Third thing we've added is the ability for you to actually inspect the visual tree while the application is running. And this is actually better shown if I do a quick demo of this, what this looks like. I'm going to switch back. So I'm going to run this application. This is the same application you saw this morning. One of the first things I want to show you is the live Visual Inspector. So if I switch back to Visual Studio, you notice here I have, oops, I just closed it. I forget what it was. Let's try this. Let's try one more time. There we go. So you can see we have the Visual Life tree here. You can see we have the full tree of the application as it is running. And I can do cool things here. For example, if I snap this here, let me snap Visual Studio, you can see if I enable selection mode, as I select items, you can see that the items in the page light up, so I can see where they are. It's very powerful. Another thing I can do, actually, is if I enable the pick mode here, I can actually, you can see as I hover over elements, there's a little red line, I can actually select these elements. So for example, here's this image. I can find where this image is. And one of my favorite things I can do is actually find where the code of this image is. Now, how many of you have inherited code from other developers, and you were tasked to change one simple thing, and you spent hours and hours trying to find where this code is? Yeah. Exactly. So this is a lifesaver. You can do this in 20 seconds and just save so much time. Now, yes, I can find where the source is, and I can modify the source. But one of my other features, my favorite features that you can do, is actually you can modify the property right there. So if you look at the Life Property Explorer, we've also added, you can see the life properties of that element. So you can see it's 48 pixels. I can increase the height here. Let me illustrate that with a template. So I'm going to go to Organize. And let's say I want to increase the size of the template here, the text in the template. I'm going to simply select, let's say, Kara. And I can see that element. I can see the properties. I can see it's the font size is 10. Let's say I want to increase it to 32 because I'm going to use this for people that can't really see that well. So I'm going to increase it real quick. And it's just going to look right there. And it's going to be amazing. OK, we'll definitely keep that feature then. And then finally is profiling tools. Now, I talked about these. We've added, by default, when you launch your application, we start debugging, you'll notice that just now, we have some profiling tools that start up when your application runs. And you can keep track of things such as your CPU usage, how much memory you're using. You can do things such as tracking breakpoints and how much a single line of code has run. You can do a heap snapshot, so you can see how many objects you have on the heap. So let me go ahead and demo that real quick. So here on the side, I have the profile running. You can see I'm using here not much. Let me restart it. And when you launch this, you will see that the diagnostic full scales unexpectedly. Isn't that an amazing feature, guys? Try this one more time. Here we go. So here are the diagnostic tools running. You can see we have CPU utilization. We had a little hit, about 19%. At the beginning, so that was when it was loading some items. You can see we're at 20, almost 26 megabytes of usage of the application. Some of the cool things you can do is actually you can see when I go to memory usage, I can take a snapshot of the heap, so I can see what elements are running in memory, and I can see what's there. If I go back to my application, if I hit a breakpoint, so I have a little breakpoint set here, you can see when I hit the breakpoint in the lifetime of the application. And if I actually step over this breakpoint, you notice that this breakpoint took about 6 milliseconds to run. So you can actually debug how these how much time a specific line of code runs. You can modify, you can see if you can increase the performance of your application. And not just that, I can now take a snapshot at this point, and I can see the difference between running that line of code and not running that line of code. And I can see there's no difference, nothing was added to the memory, it was just simple line of code. But you can imagine if you have some memory leak, you can actually find out exactly what line of code has caused these memory leaks. And it's just very powerful. So you can, should do, be able to do this on your applications anytime. Now, we haven't done just improvements on Visual Studio. We've also done improvements on Blend. How many of you have used Blend before? Amazing. So you're going to be happy now to know that Blend has been improved incredibly. Now, for those that don't know, Blend is an amazing tool to create user experiences. It's sort of a designer tool. It allows you to easily create animations and have you have a really rich timeline and easily create your UIs within your application. One of the feedback we've received from developers is that it's not easy to use Blend and Visual Studio at the same time. Many developers just want to simply write code in Blend and not having to switch to Visual Studio, and the editor in Blend in 2013 wasn't the greatest. Additionally, sometimes when we switch between Blend and Visual Studio, you get some pop-ups saying you've changed something, and you haven't really changed something, and you're figuring out why not that's working, and you're trying to not pull your hair out. So we've kind of fixed that. Now Blend is rebuilt with Visual Studio technologies. You can now start Blend, create a new project, do some design work, create your UI, write some XAML the same way you write XAML or C# in Visual Studio. You have the exact same editors, the exact same features, and you can run the application directly from Blend, and it's much powerful to use. And I think you guys are going to love it. Now, we've talked about the extension SDK when I talked about IoT at the keynote. Because these applications are running on many different devices, these devices have different functionalities. You saw with the IoT device that I have access to the GPIO controller. That's not available everywhere. Now, one of the ways you can run this code across multiple devices is you can simply just check to see what device you're running on. If I'm running on IoT, if I'm running on desktop, if I'm running on phone. Now, with the extension SDKs, we're trying to avoid you doing that. We're trying to enable you to simply select what features you're using in an application rather than selecting what device your application is running on. So rather than selecting to see if something's running on desktop or phone, you simply check to see if a specific feature is available. And the way we've enabled this is by using the extension SDKs. If you want to use an API that's only available on IoT, you simply use the IoT extension SDK. And then when you want to simply check to see if that API is available, you use the new API called apiinformation.istypresent, and you pass the API you want to use. Now, this code will run on an IoT device and will simply run the GPIO code because that feature is available on an IoT device. It will not run it will just simply not execute that code on a desktop device that does not have GPIO access. However, if that desktop device does have GPIO access, this code will still run. So this gives you more control of just specifying what feature you want to run on your application rather than just what device your application is running on. Now let's talk about some of the new things we've done into the app model. Now, before Windows 10, we had many different app models. Windows Phone was different than Windows 8, different way to manage resources, different way the lifecycle was running. We've now unified the app model across devices. They're exactly the same. It unifies across all the way from IoT devices all the way up to the HoloLens and Surface Hub. For those that don't know, the app model manages everything. It manages from the moment you install the application to how the resources are managed, how the lifetime application is, and hopefully not when the moment that user uninstalls the application. Now, many developers ask, well, I already have code that I've written for Windows Phone 8.1 Silverlight, for example. Will that code run on any Windows 10 device? Now, the answer to this question is very simple. If you've written code for a specific device, that code will continue running on that device. However, it will not run on all Windows 10 devices. So a Windows Phone 8.1 Silverlight application will continue working on Windows 10 mobile devices, a phone. It will not run on desktop. However, if you build a Windows 10 application, that application will run across all Windows 10 devices. Now, because these applications run on many devices, they have many different resource requirements, and we have to be careful about the way we handle multitasking and how you run many applications at the same time. For running background services in Windows 8.1, we had quotas. If a background task, for example, is running, you can only run it at 2 seconds CPU time every 15 minutes or more. Now we've gone away with that. Now we're much smarter the way you run the application. Depending on what device the application is running on, it will get more time if more resources are available to that device. There's no more quotas. There's no more limitations. If the device is capable of giving you that resource, the device will give you that resource. Your application can run more in the background. We've also added more capabilities for new APIs for you to ask for more time. If you need more time to save a file, you can ask for that time, and the device can decide if you can give you that time. We even have APIs for you to check to see to actually enable the application to continue running. For example, if you want to give turn-by-turn navigation instructions, you can do that just by enabling this API. Beyond that, we also enable many more triggers for background tasks. We talked about beacons in the keynote. I'm going to talk about beacons in later on today. But we have a beacon now, a trigger, that enables you to wake up your application when a beacon's nearby near your phone or your device. We have a trigger now that you can actually, believe it or not, you can actually run background tasks from within your application. You can start a background task just by using an app trigger. Now, unifying the app model has also allowed us to unify the navigation model. When you run your applications, when you write your applications, you don't have to worry about how the navigation model is handled between different devices. In 8.1, Windows Phone 8.1 and Windows 8.1, there was different behavior depending on which device you were on if you keep pressing the back button. In 8.1, pressing the back button did not close the application, simply suspended it. In 8.1, you simply just closed the application. Now we've changed that, and now they're the same, and we've unified it on the Windows Phone model, where you keep pressing back, simply go back to the previous application. So the lifecycle is the same across everything. Now, one of my favorite things we've added to the platform is the ability for applications to talk to each other. In 8.1 timeframe, if an application wanted to talk to a different application and pass some data, they had to use protocol activation. However, protocol activation was limited in the way that the called application can talk to the calling application. You could only simply just call this application and your application will be suspended. There's no way for the application you call to call you back or pass some data back. We've added now the capability for you to call an application with Deep Link but request results. Once the called application is done, they can simply call you back and pass in a result. And they can pass in objects, they can pass in files. It's very rich of what you can pass between applications now. And that works very similar to protocol activation. And that's for foreground-to-foreground activation. Now, we've also added the ability for a foreground application to talk to a background task of a different application. Think of having a social service that has access to user contacts, has access to user friends. If I write an application and I want to access the service, I do not need to know how the API works. I do not need to log in the user. I can simply talk to this application's background task and get the data I need from this application just by using this contract. And I actually want to show you how this looks like with a demo. Now, here is a very simplified project. If you look at the Solution Explorer, you notice I have a couple projects. I have an app service. This would be the social application I was talking about. And you notice this app service also has a background task. This is the background task that we'll be accessing via the application that we're writing, which in this case is my application, the app service client application. Now, if I want to access an application's background service, I simply need to use the app service connection API. I need to specify the app service name and package family name. This is information that the background task application will provide to you. So they will expose this endpoint to you. And you simply, once you have this information, you open a connection, and you simply send value set messages. You send messages to the application, and the application can respond back to you. And then you wait for the connection for the application to respond back to you. The code for the background task of the application is very simple. You simply register to receive an event when a request has been received from other applications on the system. Once an event has been received, You can open up the message, read what the message is, and respond depending on what the application is asking. In this case, I have a very simple request. I'm asking for a ping, and I'm expecting a pong. So I'm going to run my application. Here it is. And you see the UI is beautiful. Now, by the way, you cannot steal this UI. This is something I've worked really hard on, and it's been copyrighted. So please do not steal this. I'll know. Now, if I press the ping button, what will happen is my application will try to talk to the background service of the other application, try to get the data. And hopefully, we'll see a pong. Now, you notice the other application didn't open. It still continued running in the background, but I still was able to access this data. And I can continue doing it constantly. I think that's enough, right? Oh, a couple more times. There we go. Enough. Now, it's very easy now for your applications to talk to each other and to use this. And you can imagine of the many examples of how you can actually use this with many different. You don't have to log in your users to a service because the application already exists for that service. You can simply just talk to that service already on the platform that knows how to talk to its own web services. Now, finally, one of the things that we've converged on as a platform, and something where the platform is very powerful around, is the live tiles. Now, because these live tiles can run on many different screen sizes and different screen resolutions and DPIs, they need to look great. And what you notice here is these three live tiles are actually the medium-sized live tile. They're the exact same live tile. But we've worked really hard to make sure that no matter what device they're running on, they look beautiful and they can adapt. They're very adaptive. Now, that's great, but what we've actually heard from developers that they want is the ability to create their own templates. Now, for those that know, for live tiles, we have a certain number of templates in Windows 8.1 that allow you to simply create your own live tiles. You specify an image, specify some text, but you're limited to those templates. In Windows 10, we've added the ability for you to create your own XML that will create your own branding, will create your own templates. You no longer have to be limited if you don't want to, but templates. The old templates still exist, but you can create your own templates now. Now, we've talked about Toast templates, and it's the same thing with Toast templates. We've received the exact same feedback. We have a certain amount of templates that developers can use, and they didn't want more. We've now added the same ability. You can create your own templates by using this XML language. You can now also use, you can add interactive content in these live tiles, in these Toast templates. You can add text boxes and buttons that will allow you to do some work in the background without actually launching your application. And the cool thing about this is actually this is using the app-to-app model I just demoed. It's simply, if a user types something in, a background task will start up, will do some processing, and will tell you. The user does not have to go away from what they were doing. Now, the notification center has been unified across desktop and mobile, and you have the same exact API access as you have on all devices. So you have full control over what notifications lie in the notification center. You can remove a notification from your application if an application is stale, for example. You can get an event when a user has removed a notification from the notification center, and it's very rich about how you can actually control what the user sees from your application. The final topic I want to talk about is performance on many different devices and how you can actually run your managed code as a native code. Now, we've created .NET Native to enable these applications to get the most out of the platform, to run as close as they can to the metal as possible. .NET Native is the ability to compile managed code down to native code. It uses the VC++ runtime library. It does not use .NET library. It can actually reduces the memory usage of your application and increases the execution of your code because it is actually running native bytes on the platform. So with .NET Native, you can actually get up to 60% savings from cold start. So application can start much faster now. Even if in warm start, they can start up to 40% faster. And just by using .NET Native, you get about 30% improvements in memory. I want to show you quickly how you can actually enable this within your applications. So here's the same App Services demo application. What I want to show you is if you right-click on the application and go to Properties, you can now see we have this new button here called Compile with .NET Native Toolchain. simply just enabling this in your Windows 10 applications will compile your applications out to native code, and you get that benefit. The cool thing here that we're doing is, you notice I'm in debug mode right now. If I switch to release mode, you notice that compile with .NET Native Toolchain is automatically checked. The reason why we're doing this is because when you actually compile your application to submit to the store, we compile your application with .NET Native. We want to make sure that you can actually test your application and see what your application will look like with .NET Native. When you compile your application without .NET Native, you can still get the fast debugging and fast compile time as you used to right now. But because .NET Native does some optimizations, it's as if you were compiling, because you're compiling native code, it will take a bit longer. So we'll enable you to still get the benefit of deploying and debugging your application quickly, but and still testing it with .NET Native. When you submit your application to the store, your application will actually be submitted as .NET Native. So it's a requirement now that all Windows 10 applications for the consumer store are .NET Native applications. Because these applications will run on phones, will run on desktop. We want to make sure that the performance in all these devices is the best that it can be. And that's not what you want to see. So in summary, all of this features that I showed you today is because it's a feedback we receive from the community. We've set up the feedback application on Windows 10. We've set up a user voice for you to provide this feedback on and vote on features that you want to see. And this is something we've been working on. We've done a lot of work in XAML to enable you to create responsive design and to do things that you don't have to worry about, things such as input modalities and worry about screen sizes. We do a lot of this work for you, so you can just focus on building your applications. And we're using the exact same XAML as you are. The exact same XAML APIs are being used in the first-party applications, in the start menu, in the platform. So now you get the benefit of having a fast and performant platform that we're using as well. We've improved Visual Studio in many ways to enable you to create responsive designs and also create performant applications very quickly with all the new tools we've added. And we've unified the app model across all Windows 10 devices. You only have to worry about building one application that runs everywhere. We've added ability for you to do rich app-to-app communication, so applications can now be part of a community. They can talk to each other. And we've enabled native code compilation for managed languages, so applications can even get that benefit for being a native application. So that's all for my sessions. What's next is currently is 12:10. So we have a lunch until 1:45. At 1:45, we're going to have a really fun challenge, a little game. So you don't want to miss this. We're going to have some prizes. It's going to be pretty fun. I'm going to make you do some work. So for those that don't want to do work, I'm sorry. You're going to have lunch. After this, David, the little French guy you saw at the keynote, he's going to come back. He's going to do a talk on Edge and hosted web applications. And then after that, we're going to have a 10-minute lightning rounds, which is going to be 6 small talks, each 10 minutes, and we're going to have a little fun with this. Now, go ahead and have some lunch. Thank you for coming, and I'll see you in about an hour and a half.